leaned back in his chair. It was an exasperated gesture that looked so much like Ahmed it made me homesick. The Abdals didn't have it in them to be nearly so difficult as children. Abdals would be a fair bit harder to leave a country to, though. It slipped out before I could bite my tongue. I was too comfortable with him. He might look like him, but he wasn't Ahmed. But the Sultan surprised me by laughing. True enough. Though it would be easier to govern over a country full of Abdals, I wouldn't have to constantly try to convince them I'm doing what is best for them. One of the maps pinned up on the wall showed the whole world. Maraji was in the middle, Amanpour crowding our borders on one side, Galandi looming over the north, swallowing countries as it went towards Jarpur, and the Ionian Peninsula and Sicha, the country that had sheltered Ahmed, Jin, and Delilah for years. Albus, a fortress holding against Galandi's expansion in the sea, and Gamenix on land. It was a big world. The people of Miraji are rising up in protest of the Galan, of the Albish, of the Sichian, of all our foreign friends and enemies. I swallowed and felt the pain in my throat from where I'd almost just been choked to death by one such foreigner. So don't renew an alliance with them. I knew I'd overstepped. I knew as soon as the words left my mouth. But the Sultan didn't rage at me the way he had his sons. He didn't sneer at me. He didn't try to explain to me like he had when we sat across from each other over dinner in the next room. You're dismissed, Amani. And somehow, that was worse than anything else he could have said. Chapter 31. I think they're fading. Layla inspected the marks along my throat. They'd bloomed into a glorious necklace of purple fingerprints by the next day. They ought to be gone by Aurangzeb. That seemed to be everyone in the harem's biggest worry on my behalf, that my near death would clash with my Kalat. Across the garden, I could see two women whispering behind their hands, casting me looks. Good God, I hated this place. Layla's gentle hands dropped away. I really think you ought to go see Tamid, though. He might be able to give you something for that. I'll survive. Her big eyes were wide with something unspoken. What? I asked. Rahim told me. About Aurangzeb. About getting out. And just... I wouldn't want to leave Tamid behind. I started. Had Tamid told her about me? That I'd done exactly that? Was that a jab meant to hit me in that old wound? But there didn't seem to be any kind of malice behind her words. Layla bowed her head, brushing her hair nervously behind her ear, avoiding my gaze. She was in love with Tamid. Or at least she thought she was. She was still shy of 16. And she'd spent her whole life trapped in a palace. Tamid had to be one of the first men our age she'd ever encountered who wasn't a brother to her. No wonder she'd think she was in love with him. And he was clever, and he was kind. No wonder she'd really fall in love with him. And she was right. I couldn't leave him behind a second time. When Sam walked through the wall that night, he had a split lip, and he was walking like he might have bruised his ribs. It was the one sign he brought with him that things were getting close to a boiling point on the outside. He only ever gave me good news from the rebellion. That Sara Motai was safe, that an ambush had been successful, that the delegation meant to inspect the remains of the factory and dust walk had never made it that far. You want me to break out 4 people from this palace now? And I only have 2 hands. Sam scratched at the scab on his lip. I slapped his hand away. He was going to make it scar. 3 people. 4, Sam said. I'm counting you. How long have you known me now? Do you really still underestimate the prowess of the blue-eyed bandit? He flung his shima over his shoulder. It snagged on one of the branches of the weeping wall tree. Is it just me, or have you gotten more ridiculous? It was so like Sam to try to dodge anything even a little bit serious. Like the real possibility I might not be able to escape at Aurangzeb with them. Ridiculously smitten with you. He'd managed to extract the shima with some dignity. I realized he was trying to make me laugh, and it was working. You're not smitten with me, you're in love with someone else. It almost slipped out, but I stopped myself in time. Sam spent a lot of time bragging about conquests. I was more than sure half of them were invented, but I'd never heard him talk about anyone in particular that he actually cared about. I searched his face now, looking for a hint of something truthful under there. But I was the one with traitor eyes, not him. You sound awfully sure of yourself, my beautiful friend. He was all swagger as he planted his hands on either side of me against the tree. Want to bet on that? He was going to kiss me, I realized. Or he wanted me to think he was, to prove some stupid point. Your lip is bleeding. I reached out to where the split was, but Sam caught my hand playfully as he leaned in a little closer. I didn't feel anything. Not the way I did when Jin looked at me the way Sam was. Or was pretending to. No rush of heat invading my whole body. The world around him was still as sharp as it had been before he touched me. He wasn't Jin. But he was here when Jin wasn't. The laugh was unmistakable. Our heads snapped around, pulling us apart before his mouth could find mine. Ayat was in the gateway to the Weeping Wall Garden, head thrown back to the sky in a laugh, like she was thanking the heavens for the gift that had been sent to her. 17 years of desert instincts reared in my chest. Only I wasn't in the desert now, and this was a different kind of danger. You know, in all this time looking for a way to keep you out of my husband's bed, Ayat said, I never thought it would be as incredibly obvious as this. You're just one of the hundreds of women in the harem stupid enough to take a lover. Ayat. I took a step forward, and she took one back. I stopped, keenly aware that she could bolt like a startled animal any second and run to sell me out. Don't do this. It's not... Oh, it's very much too late to negotiate, Amani. And then she whipped around, racing back to the harem. Well, Sam said, this seems like it might be a problem. It was a matter of hours until the Sultan and Kadir were back from greeting the Galen King, from lying to him and saying it was the rebellion who had killed his ambassador. A handful of hours to stop Ayat before she got the chance to spill the news to her husband. Stop her or get everyone out. Sam was making a run for it back to the rebel camp for help. I still didn't know where it was, and I was grateful for that. If the Sultan ordered me to tell him, my ignorance would buy them some time at least. But they still had to be prepared to run. In the meantime, I was going to try to stop Ayat. If there was one person who was a bigger threat to Ayat than I was, it was Shira. And she was still standing. I needed to know how. Shira bartered in information. She had something that kept Ayat off her back, and I needed it. I burst back towards the core of the harem, breathing hard. Something was different. I felt it immediately. I spotted Layla, dark hair gathered up off her neck, staring across the garden, worrying her thumbnail. Layla! I dashed across to her. Listen to me. Ayat just found out. It's complicated. If she speaks to your father or to Kadir, we're not going to be able to get you out of the palace at Aurangzeb like we planned, so you need to be prepared to leave tonight if I tell you to. And I need to find Shira. I summarized quickly. Do you know where she is? Layla looked startled as I spilled the information out at her, but she grasped onto the last question.
The Sultima? Her baby's coming. Someone has sent word to Kadir.
That was it, I realized. That was the restless wildness filling the harem. Damn, bad timing. Layla, where is she? Shira's screams got louder as I burst down the hallway. There were a handful more harem women sprawled in prayer outside the door. A servant woman rushed out, carrying a blood-soaked cloth. Shira's screams followed her out. Then the door slammed shut again, muffling them. And then, suddenly, silence dropped like a stone in Shira's rooms. I held my breath, trying to count out heartbeats as the silence stretched. Waiting for it to be broken by something. A shout, an accusation, a midwife stepping out to let us know that Shira hadn't survived. It was a baby's wail that ended it. I let a sigh of relief escape. It wasn't even all the way out of my lungs before there was another scream. Not Shira's this time. I moved like a shot for the door, tearing it open. Shira was collapsed in a heap of sweaty hair and bloodied cloth, clutching a small, swaddled bundle to her chest, her knees pulled up around the baby like she could protect it. The three women around her were staring like they'd been turned to stone. A fourth was slumped against the wall, hands clasped over her mouth, shaking. I took another step forward until I could clearly see the small bundle Shira was holding. The baby didn't have Sam's blue eyes. He had blue hair. Like Maz's hair. A bright, violent blue, like the hottest part of a flame. This wasn't Sam's son. It was a genie's. Shira had given birth to a Demji. Suddenly, Layla and Rahim weren't the most important people to get out of here. Shira, I dropped by her side. Can you walk? Shira finally lifted her eyes from the baby. I can run if I've got to. Whatever polish the city'd given to her accent, it was gone now. She sounded dustwalk through and through. She pushed herself off the bed slowly, but without so much as shaking. I'd never seen Shira look so impressive before. She'd had an air about her when she stood as the Sultima in her fine clothes and unearned arrogance, but that was different from the fierceness she wore now, wrapped in a ruined khalat and sheets, holding her son. Let's go then. The lack of guards in the harem had made Shira scared for her life since she conceived, but it might be what saved her life now. There was no one to stop us as we pushed our way out of her rooms. Mothers, sisters, wives, sons, servants, they all gaped mutely, unsure of what to do. Though I was sure somebody'd had the sense to run for help. We didn't have much time, but we had some. My heart was racing. Shira, I glanced around a corner.
It was a quiet garden, thick with flowers and empty now. We were close to the Weeping Wall. I just prayed that Sam would be there to help us when we got there. I need to know, what did you hold over Ayet all these months? What did you have that kept her away from you? Shira stumbled, and I caught her. I'll tell you if you get me out of here alive, she joked. Even now, with death on her heels, Shira was still the bargainer of the harem. Shira, please! A husband, Shira said finally. Another husband outside the walls of the harem. She put poison in his food after he broke two of her ribs. She bribed her way through her inspection. She tried to put it delicately. A few words of truth in the Sultim's ear, and I could have made her disappear. Silk rope around the throat in her sleep and disposed of in the sea. That's how they go when the Sultim wants to make them disappear quietly. I clung to the words. I had to get Ayet before she got to Kadir. I had to let her know I could ruin her in return if she tried to blow my cover. We were almost at the Weeping Wall, so close to freedom. I heard the familiar click of pistol holsters against belts, the sound of boots hammering into the ground. It was moments before we were surrounded by men in uniform with the Sultan and Sultim with them. Kadir shoved his way through the ranks. He surged towards Shira. I started to move between the Sultim and my cousin, but two soldiers grabbed him first. Kadir started to fight them. Stand down! She's my wife, and a liar and a whore! He was struggling. It is my right to do with her as I see fit, and I am going to make her bleed for her treason. Shira shifted her child against her chest, staring down Kadir, as fearless as I had ever seen her. I did this to stay alive, because you are a vicious, stupid, impotent man. Kadir lunged for her. The Sultan gave a flick of his wrist, and Kadir was pulled back by the soldiers again. Take my son somewhere he can regain a level head. My wife, Kadir started, but the Sultan cut across him. This is business for rulers, not petty husbands. I could hear Kadir's protests as he was dragged across the garden. You know what the penalty is for violating your marriage vows, Shira. The Sultan's voice was calm as they disappeared. I had an image of a moment like this 15 years ago. Delilah being carried away as the Sultan wrapped his hands around Ahmed's mother's throat. Kadir will never father a child. He can't. And I reckon you know that too, Your Exalted Highness. Shira pulled herself up straight. I did what I had to do for our country. I believe that some part of you thinks that you did, the Sultan said. I always liked you, Shira. This is a shame. You were cleverer than most. I've heard that you like to strike bargains. I have one last one for you. Your son's life, in exchange for the name of the genie who fathered him. Shira, I warned, but it was too late. Berishte. She raised her chin in defiance, oblivious that she had just given the Sultan another genie's true name. He told me he would make me the mother of a ruler, a true prince, a greater Sultan than Kadir could ever hope to be. I had never seen uncertainty on the Sultan's face before, but I thought I saw it there for just a moment, and I couldn't blame him. A truth out of a genie's mouth was a powerful thing. If Shira wasn't lying, she might be holding a future ruler. Bereshte, the Sultan repeated. Good. Take the child, Amani. It was an order, and I was already fighting my arm's urge to obey. What will happen to Shira? My arms were moving without my meaning them to. The Sultan had never looked so much like Ahmed as he did in that moment. It was the same face Ahmed wore when he told me something he knew I didn't want to hear, but that had to be done anyway. Please, I said. Shira was whispering to her son, making him promises she wasn't going to be able to keep. Clutching at the only moments she was going to have with her child. My mind was racing, trying to find something, an escape, anything. But we were trapped. Some things there was just no way out of. Her child was in my arms. Please, don't kill her. My cousin's eyes met mine. Her lips parted. The Sultan's words came back to me. Shira was good at making bargains, and she had one last thing to trade, one last coin she could try to buy her life with. Me. She could offer the Sultan the blue-eyed bandit and the whole rebellion in exchange for her life. She could destroy me now. I didn't have anything. His name is Fadi, she said. Fadi was our grandfather's name. The name our mothers had before they were married. Lock her away, the Sultan ordered dispassionately, already turning, already forgetting her now that she was just another useless girl in the harem. Amani, come with me. Bring the child. Fadi wailed louder in my arms the further away we got from his mother.
Chapter 32. The Traitor Genie. In the days that only immortals remembered, the world was changeless. The sun did not rise or set. The sea had no tides. The genie had no fear, nor joy, nor grief, nor pain. Nothing lived or died. Everything just was. Then the first war came. It brought with it dawn and dusk. It brought with it high seas and new mountains and valleys. And more than anything, it brought mortality. The humans were made with a spark of genie fire, but they were not endless. And that seemed to make all the difference in the world. That changed everything. They didn't just exist. They were born and they died. And in between, they felt so much that it drew the immortals to them, though they were only sparks to the genie's greater fires. As the war ended, the genie of the great desert gathered and gazed across a changed world, the land that had been theirs. The war had ended. The mortals had served their purpose. They had fought. They had died. Then they multiplied. The genie looked on incredulously as the humans built walls and cities and found a life outside of war. They found new wars to fight. The genie wondered if they should let the humans carry on. The genie had made the mortals. Now the war was over, they could unmake them if they so chose. Some of the genie argued that humanity had served its purpose. Humans would only cause trouble. Better to burn them now, all at once. Return them to the earth from which they had been made before they overran it. The genie, Fereshte, agreed with this. The world was simpler before mortals. He had watched his own son, born to a human woman, survive a dozen battles with the destroyer of worlds' creatures, only to die in a brawl with another mortal. And though the genie had quickly forgotten to be afraid of death, when the destroyer of worlds was defeated, they were slower to forget this new thing the humans called grief. It seemed like a feeling too great to contain for a genie who was eternal. But the genie Darayavahush argued against destroying them. He said humans should be allowed to live. They had earned their right to share the earth by defeating the destroyer of worlds. They were remarkable. They had fallen in waves on hundreds of battlefields, but had somehow continued to stand in the way of the destroyer of worlds' armies. Such will to survive should not be ignored. The gene argued as years passed, and a generation of humans passed into another. They argued as cities rose where there had been none before, and new rulers succeeded old ones for the throne. As the mortals slowly forgot the time of the destroyer of worlds. Finally, when the last of the mortals who had lived to see the first war passed into death, the gene gathered at the home of one among them who had claimed an old battlefield as his domain, a place where the earth had been ripped into a great valley where no other gene wished to live. They decided on a vote. They would cast a black stone into the water if they believed it was best to end mortality, and a white stone to let the mortals live. The stones piled up, black, then white, one after another, until the two sides were exactly equally matched, and only the genie Bahadur was left to cast a vote that would decide the fate of all humanity. Farishte felt sure that Bahadur would cast for his side. Bahadur, too, had watched a mortal child of his die. A daughter with blue eyes and the sun in her hands, who the humans called a princess, one of their foolish words to pretend any one of them was more powerful than another. Surely Bahadur had felt the same pain Farishte had. He would want to end it just as much. And yet, when Bahadur finally cast his stone, it was as white as bone. Farishte's side lost. And thus all the gene made an oath that none among them would annihilate mortality, and because they were gene, that oath was the truth. Centuries passed. Farishte didn't know how many, for only those whose days were numbered counted them. He tried to stay away from the humans at first, but they were constantly changing. It was hard not to watch them. Every time Farishte thought he had grown bored of them, they did something new. They made something new, sometimes out of nothing. Palaces rose higher than before. Train tracks carried them across the desert. Music sprang seemingly from their minds to their fingers. And every so often, Farishte could not resist temptation anymore. But time taught him ways to avoid the grief. He never looked over the children he gave mortal women. He had no interest in watching little pieces of himself be destroyed by the world his fellow gene had allowed to continue. Then there came a day when Farishte heard his name being called with an order he could not disobey. And so it was that he came to stand prisoner in front of a sultan and a demji. A demji holding a child that Farishte had marked as his own, though he had already forgotten the child's mother. It was easier that way. But he remembered all his children, and he remembered the pain he had felt when each of them died. So when the sultan held a knife above his child and asked for the names of his fellow gene, he surrendered easily. He could not watch this spark of himself die. He gave Darayavahush's name first. He gave the sultan only the names of the gene who had been stupid enough to think that humanity was harmless and worth saving. The ones who had cast a vote to let them live. Half the gene in the desert. And he laughed as one by one they became trapped by the creatures they had chosen to let live. Chapter 33. The sultan had been dangerous enough with one genie. Now he had an army of them. They might have created humanity to fight their wars, but there were stories of what happened when immortals entered the wars of men too. Cruel conquerors who leashed them in iron and turned their powers against helpless nations. The heroes who won gene over to their side by sheer virtue and flattened their enemies. No matter what the circumstances, immortals were unstoppable. My thoughts were in a storm as the sultan led me back to the harem, one firm hand on my spine. There was too much to do and not enough time. I had to get news of the other Jean to Sam. I had to make sure Fadi, who was screaming in my arms, was safe in the palace. I had to find a way to save Shira. And I had to do it before Ayet betrayed me to the Sultan. Shira giving birth had distracted everyone, but it was only a matter of time now before Ayet got Kadir or someone else to listen to her, and the Sultan found out I was the blue-eyed bandit. And then it would be over. I had to do everything I could to help before it all ended.
Father?
My thoughts were interrupted by Rahim. He was striding down the hallway toward us, his collar unfastened, hair disheveled, trailed by two servants. Dawn was just breaking, but he looked like he hadn't had any sleep all night. He would be in trouble, too, when Ayet sold me out. What was he still doing here?
A word.
He drew his father to one side, out of earshot from me, leaning in close to say something rapid fire under his breath. I was suddenly nervous. He was still here, and there was no way Rahim would let Layla's life be put in danger. He'd choose her over me in a second. I had no doubt about that. Same as I'd do for any of the rebellion over the two of them. I didn't begrudge him that. But it hadn't ever crossed my mind that he might save his own skin by selling mine out instead of waiting until Ayed could do it for us.
Forgive me.
The two servants with Rahim stepped in front of me, blocking my view of my so-called ally. One was reaching for Fadi in my arms expectantly, her head bowed.
No.
I pulled Fadi closer to my pounding heart. I wasn't going to hand him over. I might not be able to do anything else before I got found out, but I wasn't about to let another Demji get swallowed up in the harem and disappear.
He needs to be fed.
The second servant spoke up, a note of exasperation in her voice.
Now is not the time to be difficult.
It was the closest I'd ever seen to insolence in one of the harem servants. It made me look twice at her. But in spite of her voice, her head was bowed low in respect. She'd said it loud enough for the Sultan's eyes to dart over.
Hand it over, Amani.
The Sultan gave me a distracted order as he continued his conversation with Rahim. I tried to catch his eye over his father's shoulder, but Rahim might as well never have known me for all the attention he was giving me.
It's all right.
The first servant, too, sounded familiar somehow, although I was sure I'd never seen her in the harem before.
We'll take good care of him.
In that moment, as the Sultan turned his back entirely on us, the first servant dared to lift her head fully, and I was face to face with Hala. She was hiding her golden skin from sight with an illusion, but it was still unmistakably her. It was unsettling. She was both wholly familiar and completely strange. Her high, arrogant cheekbones and long nose were unmistakable, but she looked younger and more vulnerable without her golden veneer. And the other servant. I looked closer now. Her eyes were wrong. They weren't the desert dark they ought to have been. Instead, they were the color of liquid gold.
Emine.
My heart sped up. Something was in motion, but I wasn't sure what. Emine winked at me. It was so quick that even if the Sultan had noticed, it would have been mistaken for a blink. I loosened my grip on the baby in my arms as I passed him over to Hala. I'd been given an order, yes, but there weren't many people in the world I'd trust with Fadi more than Hala. She might not scream maternal instinct, but Demji took care of their own. I didn't have time to watch them disappear into the harem before Emine grabbed my arm.
Walk quickly and don't look back.
What's happening? I asked under my breath as we moved fast down the hallway. Too quickly, I realized.
If the Sultan took his eyes off Rahim for even a second, he'd realize I was all but running. Something that passes for a plan at short notice, that's what. Take a right here.
We turned the corner, and then we were out of the Sultan's view. Rahim wasn't betraying us, I realized. He was a distraction. I felt suddenly ashamed for believing he'd turn on us so easily.
By the time he was done talking to his father, the Sultan would think I was back in the harem, if he wondered at all.
Fadi, the baby, I started. The Sultan will look for him. You need to...
Emin's eyes rolled to the sky, cutting me off.
Believe it or not, we can make a stab at executing a plan without you.
Emin slowed down as we left the cool of the marble palace walls and passed into one of the huge, sprawling gardens. It was only early morning, so the unrelenting heat of the day hadn't set in yet, but I still squinted against the sun after the dark of the vaults.
We stopped, ducking behind a tree, out of sight of anyone who might walk by.
Emin yanked the servant's clothes off in one quick gesture. Underneath was a palace guard's uniform that had been made for someone a whole lot taller and broader. Emin started unrolling the sleeves and loosening the belt buckle, making room for a new body.
We can't just walk a baby out of the harem. Somebody would notice he was gone.
Unless the Sultan thinks he's dead, that is. If, say, half of the harem were to see Kadir drown the baby in a fit of rage, for instance.
Hala could do that. That's why they'd risk bringing her into the palace. All she'd have to do was take Fadi back to the harem and then play the scene out in the heads of whoever happened to be nearby. She could even put it into Kadir's head if she wanted to. She could make him believe he'd really killed him. And even if she didn't get to Kadir, who would the Sultan believe? A dozen wives and daughters in the harem who saw it happen? Or a son with a violent temper? Especially when the child was nowhere to be found.
Then my dear sister can just walk him out of the palace door to safety under the cover of an illusion.
Emin shook out the long sleeves so they fell over the dainty hands of her female form.
It's almost easy.
Emin was right. This could work. We could save Fadi.
And his mother? I asked, anticipation building in my chest.
My cousin, Shira, how do we get her out?
We're not going to...
Emin started, then quickly stopped herself before she could truth tell the future. But I knew what she had been about to say. We're not going to save Shira.
It didn't matter whether she said it or not. It seemed like it was already decided.
Why? I asked. If we can get Fadi out, why not Shira? Sam has clearly just walked you and Hala through the walls. He could...
The prison is iron bars all the way through. There's no way for Sam to walk in there and walk her back out.
Emin didn't meet my eyes. But I can walk you in there to see her before she's executed. So that was what the guard's uniform was for.
She's asking for you.
That's not a good reason not to save her.
Emin was holding the truth back. I just didn't know why.
If Hala wanted to, she could get a soldier to unlock Shira's cell and walk her out under the Sultan's nose. Which means there's some other reason saving Shira's not part of the plan.
It wasn't a question.
Why?
Emin straightened. She was drowning in the guard's uniform. She looked like a child playing dress-up in grown-up's garb. But her face was wise beyond her 18 years.
Because we haven't given up on saving you yet.
Understanding hit me all at once.
Because if Shira disappeared, I might as well turn myself in. An infant could disappear believably, but Shira's death couldn't be faked near so easy. If she was gone, she'd be counted as escaped, and sooner or later the Sultan's eyes would turn to me, the girl who had already tried to help her once. And he would ask questions, and I would sell out the whole rebellion with a word. It was Shira or everyone else. But Ayet, I started to tell her that I was already done for, that I'd been stupid and careless and gotten myself caught, that it was over for me anyway. You don't need to worry about Ayet. Amin started to shapeshift, to fill out the uniform. He was a head taller than I was in a few seconds. What do you mean? He didn't answer, scratching at his chin angrily as it filled out with a beard.
I hate these things.
Whichever soldier's shape he was stealing had a voice for giving orders, deep and ponderous.
Navid has been growing a beard since we fled camp, so now kissing him is like rubbing my face against burlap. You're lucky Jin's always been clean-shaven, you know.
At least Navid doesn't occasionally vanish to parts unknown on you, I offered back. I pressed my palms against my eyes, pushing back against the exhaustion. So we're supposed to just let Shira die?
The way it seems to me, one of you has to,
Emin said.
If you really wanted me to, I could save her, but I'd have to kill you here and now so that you couldn't betray us.
He drummed his fingers along the knife at his belt. I knew Emin meant it. He'd do anything for this rebellion, just like any of us, and that'd include killing me.
You can do a lot more for the rebellion alive, and she...
Emin hesitated, like he didn't want to say it. But he was a Demji, he had to be truthful.
She can do a lot more by dying.
Even in summer, it wasn't warm in the palace prison. I felt the chill sink into my bones as Emin and I descended the worn stone steps. The guard at the door hadn't even tried to stop us, after one glance at Emin in uniform. We would be left alone down here. Shira was shivering in a corner, wearing the same clothes she'd given birth in. Her back turned to the door. I took a step toward her, but Emin stopped me, one hand on my shoulder. He pointed toward the cell neighboring Shira's. It took only a few steps closer to the cell to realize that what I'd thought was a pile of discarded clothing was moving. Just barely. Only the faint rise and fall of breathing. It was a woman, collapsed on her side, dark hair spilling across her face. But I knew the culotte she was wearing, the color of roses with stitching the same shade as overripe cherries. It was the same one she'd worn that day in the menagerie. Ayet? It's no good. Shira still had her back to us. She doesn't talk anymore. She might as well be dead, except she's still breathing. Like Saida and Uzma. Driven mad. This was what Emin meant by saying that I didn't need to worry about Ayet betraying me. Slowly, Shira turned over, working her way to sitting with the help of the wall. You wanted to know where girls disappear to. She waved one hand in a gesture so grand she might have been showing off a golden-domed palace. This is where we go. I told you I had nothing to do with it. She dropped her arm. It fell limp to her side. Good news is, only one of us has to die today. Shira, don't try to comfort me.
Her tone was the same one she'd used when we shared a floor in Dustwalk, dripping with disdain. But she didn't fool me that easy anymore. She was a desperate girl. "And you," she shot at Amin, who was hovering behind me on the stairs. "You don't have to watch us like that, you know? I'm already condemned to die. What else am I possibly going to get up to between now and sundown?" Well, being condemned to death sure hadn't made her any more polite. I thought about telling her that Amin was on our side, but that wasn't what really mattered to Shira. I gave Amin the tiniest nod, and he retreated back up the steps out of earshot. "So," I slid down the wall next to the cell so we were sitting side by side. 17 years. I couldn't think of a single time we'd sat together. Not in Dustwalk. Not in the harem. It had been us facing off against each other every single time. Now we were sitting side by side with a row of steadfast iron bars between us. "You asked for me. Funny, isn't it? The last person I ever want to see is the last person I get to see alive. You don't have to explain, Shira." Half a year and I'd started realizing every conversation I had with someone in the rebellion might be our last. Sometimes it was, but it was harder to push that out of my head when I knew for sure that Shira was a dead woman. "Nobody wants to die alone." "Oh, good God, don't be so pathetic. It's depressing." Shira rolled her eyes so far back, I thought she might lose them inside her head. "There's only one thing I want from you. Your rebel friends were here. They said..." She swallowed hard, like she was trying to hide from me that she'd hoped, even just for a second, that this might not be the end. "They said they couldn't get me out." A stab of guilt went through my heart. They could. They were saving me over her. I was choosing my new family over my old. "But they said they would help Fadi." She opened her eyes, her fingers curling around the bars. "I didn't become Sultima by trusting anyone and everyone. I want to hear it from you. You might not be much, but you're still the only blood I've got here. Tell me my son is safe. Hala's gotten him out of the palace." As the words spilled off my tongue, I knew they were true. "We can protect him." A tension I hadn't even realized was there fled her body as I spoke. A fear she'd been holding deep in her bones since the first time I'd seen her in the baths. Had she looked at me that day, my Demji eyes, and understood that she was going to be done for on the day she gave birth? Before I knew the harem, I might have asked why she'd taken the risk of lying with anyone other than her husband, if she was really stupid and arrogant enough to think she wouldn't suffer the same fate as Ahmed and Delilah's mother. Of every other harem woman who had ever strayed into another man's arms. But I'd seen enough since entering the harem to know there were other ways to die here. Ayet was proof of that. "Why didn't you try to sell me out to the Sultan in exchange for your own life?" It slipped out. I never believed anyone ever did anything that wasn't for themselves before the rebellion. And there were parts of me I couldn't shake from before the rebellion. The parts that kept me alive. "You know who I am. You knew your life was all but forfeit. If survival in the harem is one big game, why not play your last piece?" I knew the look she gave me from days together in the Dustwalk schoolhouse. The one she saved if you said something particularly stupid in class. The one that made sure that you knew not just that you were stupid, but that she was a whole lot smarter than you. "The Sultan doesn't make trades. Everyone knows that. He hasn't traded anything since he traded Miraji's freedom for a throne. That's a mistake you only make once.
He takes instead. And he would have taken the knowledge of your treachery from me, and then we would have both been dead. And I wanted one of us alive. I'd rather it be me, of course, but you'll have to do. A slight smile appeared on her face at her own joke at death's doors. But it was gone quickly. When I'm gone, I want you still around with your idiotic idealist rebellion to gut the Sultan and Kadir. The more she talked, the more her accent leaked out through the cracks. Our accent from the last county. I hate them, and I hate what they did, and I almost succeeded in taking their throne, too. Wait. I cut her off before she could chase her own thoughts too far away from me. What do you mean you almost took their throne? Farishte promised. She said it with the certainty of a child repeating something she truly believed. Who didn't understand that promises were just words. But Farishte was a genie. If it was dangerous for Demji to make promises, how bad was one from a real live genie? 1,000 stories of genie promises granted in horrifying, torturous ways tumbled towards the front of my mind. I figured out that the harem was an unwinnable game early on. The only real way to win is by becoming the mother not just to a prince, but a sultim. Only Kadir can't sire any princes. And Farishte was just there, in the harem gardens one day, like he'd stepped out of a story and into my life to save me. And he said that he could give me a son. And just like that, I had a way to win the unwinnable game. To survive past Kadir losing interest in me in his bed and becoming the Sultima. Her eyes were far away. And when I touched him, he turned from fire to flesh, and he asked what I would wish for our child. What do you mean, what you wished? My mouth had gone dry. Shira's bloodshot eyes snapped open like she'd been startled from the edge of drifting to sleep. He said he could grant me a single wish for his child. Every genie can. Shira. I chose my words carefully. You've heard the stories as well as I have. A wish from a genie. In the stories, men steal wishes. They trick and lie and cheat for an easy way to change their fortunes. That's why the gene twists them. Thieves don't prosper from wishes. But if the wish is given freely, then there was no need to twist it. They could really give someone their heart's desire. You wished for more than a prince. But my mind wasn't wholly with Shira anymore. It was racing across the sands back to Dustwalk, to my own mother. If she'd been given the chance to wish for anything, what had she wished for me? What great boon had my father granted to me? You wished for your son to be Sultan. The only way to win the game. Shira tipped her head back against the cold stone wall, a small sigh slipping through her lips. That was when the tears started to come. I wished to be the mother of a ruler. I wouldn't have to scrape to survive anymore. I could have everything I ever wanted. A genie's word was truth. If Farishte had promised Shira that Fadi would be Sultan one day, what did that mean for Ahmed? But I lost. Tears rolled down her face. I'd never seen Shira cry before. It looked unnatural on her somehow. Shira, do you want me to go? No. She didn't open her eyes. You're right. Nobody wants to die alone. I expected to feel grief, but all I found inside was anger, and suddenly I was furious, and I didn't know who I was angry at. At myself for not getting her out quickly enough, at her for being stupid enough to get caught, at the Sultan for doing this to both of us. I should have wished for something else, she said finally as the tears stopped. When she opened her eyes again, there was a fire there I'd never seen in her. One I suddenly realized had been there all along. Back in Dustwalk, when I thought I'd been the only one who wanted to get out as badly as I did. In the harem, when I thought I was the only one hiding something. She'd just veiled it a whole lot better than I had. Tell me that you're going to win, Amani. That you're going to kill them all. That you're going to take our country away from them, and that my son will be safe in a world that doesn't want to destroy him. That's my real wish. Tell me that. I opened my mouth and then closed it again, fighting for the words. Truth-telling was a dangerous game. There were so many words I wanted to say. No harm will come to your son. I'm not going to let it. Your son will live free and grow strong and clever. He will live to watch this rotten rule crumble. He will live to see tyrants fall and heroes rise in their place. He will have the childhood we never could. He will run until his legs are tired if he wants to, just chasing the horizon. Or he will grow roots here if he'd rather. He will be a son any mother would be proud of. And no harm will ever come to him in the world that we are going to make after you are gone. It was too dangerous to promise any of that. I wasn't an all-powerful genie. I couldn't make promises. All I could manage was, I don't know what will happen, Shira, but I do know what I'm fighting for. You'd better... Shira leaned her head against the cool metal. Because I'm going to die for it. That's what I traded your rebellion for. Her tears had dried now. I promised them that if they got my son out, I would show this city how a desert girl dies. The crowd in the square outside the palace was restless and roaring with noise. I could hear it before I even reached the balcony at the front of the palace. It was nearly dusk, and they'd taken Shira away. They had offered her fresh clothes, but she'd turned them down. She hadn't been dragged. She hadn't fought or wailed. She stood up when they came for her, like a Sultima going to greet her subject. Instead of a girl going to die. She'd made me promise I would stay with her until the end. I might not be able to follow her onto the execution platform, but I wasn't about to break a promise to a dying girl. Nobody tried to stop me as I strode through the palace halls, Emin trailing me like a shadow. I stepped through the curtains and got my first good look at Isman since the day I'd arrived. The balcony was half-shielded by a finely carved wooden latticework screen, so that we could see the city without the people of the city seeing us. It overlooked a huge square, twice the size the rebel camp had taken up in the canyon, and it was filled to bursting. News of the execution of the Sultima had spread quickly. People were crowding to see a harem woman die for giving birth to a monster. It was like something out of the stories, but they were going to witness it. The crowds jostled for a view around a stone platform that sat directly below the balcony. Looking down on it from this angle, I could see the stone wasn't as smooth as it would look from below. It was carved with scenes from the darkness of hell. Men being eaten by skinwalkers, nightmares feeding off a child, a woman whose head was being held aloft by a ghoul with horns. That would be the last thing anyone led to the executioner's block would see. That was the last thing Shira was going to see. I almost missed Tamid. He stood in the shadows of the corner looking miserable,
Shira and Tamid had barely ever traded a word at home, no matter how small Dustwalk was. I got the feeling they would have